is for What's Universe Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. We begin with breaking news and a historic ruling Friday. South Korea's Constitutional Court formally removed impeached President Park Geun-hye from office over a corruption scandal. The ruling opens Park up to possible criminal proceedings and makes her South Korea's first democratically elected leader to be removed early from office since democracy came to the country in the late 1980s. South Korea must now hold an election within 2 months to choose Park's successor. U.S. officials say a contingent of U.S. Marines has arrived in northeast Syria to provide artillery support for local forces in an upcoming assault on Raqqa, the de facto capital of the Islamic State terror group. But there appears to be no final agreement yet between Washington and Ankara on the disposition of the Raqqa attack force, whether U.S.-backed Kurdish militiamen or Turkish-led Syrian rebels will take the lead in ousting thousands of jihadists entrenched in the city. The deployment comes as the Trump administration debates a Raqqa plan drafted by Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend, the U.S. commander overseeing the campaign against the Islamic State. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange accused the Central Intelligence Agency of incompetence after his organization was able to obtain and publish documents related to CIA hacking programs. Earlier this week, WikiLeaks published thousands of pages of what it says are confidential CIA documents that exposes the agency's hacking capacity. The CIA said Wednesday that WikiLeaks is hurting American security interests. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The United Nations says Burundi remains at risk for a crisis, nearly 2 years since the election crisis in the country. Margaret Bashir has more on the story.
Speaking to the UN Security Council, the Secretary General's Special Advisor, Jamal Ben Omar, reported a fragile security environment, soaring unemployment, especially among the youth, and deterioration of the humanitarian situation in Burundi. He also underscored that the political impasse has only deepened in the 2 years since President Pierre Nkurunziza sought what many viewed as an unconstitutional third term in office. Perhaps most troubling is the worsening human rights situation. Margaret Bashir, the United Nations.
Guatemala is mourning deaths of 34 teenage girls killed in a fire at a shelter for troubled young people near Guatemala City on Wednesday. Several other victims remain hospitalized. Police and witnesses say mattresses were deliberately set on fire in part of the shelter where the girls were locked down after trying to escape. The Guatemalan president, Jimmy Morales, blames the disaster on officials who he says ignored orders to move many of the residents to other facilities. Some Republicans are celebrating a step toward repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. The House Ways and Means Committee and the Energy and Commerce Committee voted to repeal Obamacare, but it did not have the support of many Democrats, including House Leader Nancy Pelosi.
The Republican bill is one of the largest transfers of wealth from working families to the richest people in our country. Robin Hood in reverse.
Nancy Pelosi. 6 U.S. states are challenging President Donald Trump's revised executive order banning travel from 6 Muslim-majority countries. The state of Hawaii already has filed suit arguing the new federal law will harm Muslims living in the Pacific Island state. 5 other states have banded together in a combined challenge to the latest order from Mr. Trump, meant to replace an earlier decree that was overturned by U.S. courts. Trump's new order aims to keep citizens from Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen from traveling to the United States for 3 months and suspend for 4 months a U.S. refugee resettlement program. North Korea has allowed 2 Malaysian employees of the UN World Food Program to leave the country on Thursday. They were among 11 Malaysians confined to their country's embassies in the North Korean capital of Pyongyang. The UN says the 2 Malaysians were international civil servants, not representatives of their government. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, March 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari returns home today after nearly a month abroad on medical leave.
The populace are really very happy and are prayerful and believe that God has answered their prayers for making him have more health, and he is now returning home to come and continue with the good work we have started.
That's political analyst Siddiq Umar Abubakar Gombe of Nigeria. A U.S. diplomat says women bear the brunt of suffering from Boko Haram. Gambian authorities exhumed the body of an opposition activist killed during Yahya Jammeh's regime. And the United Nations accuses Burundi of shutting the doors of engagement.
Many Burundians live in fear as a result of widespread repression and increasing intimidation by the Imbonerakure, the ruling party's youth militia. Members of opposition political parties reportedly continue to be victims of arbitrary arrest.
Jamal Ben Omar is special advisor to the UN Secretary General, and the International Criminal Court invites South Africa to explain its decision not to arrest Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir 2 years ago. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to return home today, Friday, after nearly a month abroad on an extended medical leave. The 74-year-old president went to London January 19 this year for what was called routine medical checkups. He has since postponed his return twice. Femi Adesina, special advisor on media and publicity to Mr. Buhari, told VOA last month the president was awaiting results of medical tests, but a statement issued Thursday gave no medical details. However, the presidency published pictures of Mr. Buhari meeting with the Archbishop of Canterbury in London. Political analyst Siddiq Omar Abubakar Gombe says the Nigerian populace believes God has answered their prayers and made it possible for their president to return home to continue his good work of fighting corruption and Boko Haram.
A lot of Nigerians for the last 1 month or more are into prayers in the churches, in the mosques, to God to give him sound health so that he can come back to continue with the good work we have started in the fight against corruption, against insurgency, which has bedeviled the country for almost 4 years without any headway. So the populace are really very happy and are prayerful and believe that God has answered their prayers for making him have more health, and he is now returning home to come and continue with the good work we have started.
Has the president's office said anything at all to Nigerians in terms of the status of his health? Because there's been no pictures of the president since he left. Just on Thursday, there was a picture released of the president. I wonder if you had a chance to see that picture.
Yeah, I saw it. And I think in reality, to be very fair, there have been the on and off updating the Nigerians, particularly from the presidency. His media aide and the media team have been updating Nigerians on the condition of health of the president. But it's very sad and unfortunate in Nigeria. We are too enthusiastic on things. And apart from that, many issues to do with ethnicity, regionalism, and so on are part and parcel of our policy. That because of the fight against corruption that involves some personalities from some other parts of the country, and in fact even from the north, majority of people that came from those states are not happy with the way the presidency of Muhammadu Buhari is fighting this corruption, which is one of our greatest bane that refused to allow us to develop as a nation. So I want to assure you, with the little time that he has said Nigerians now, with the enlightenment going on, Nigerians have started to see reasons to many of the things that are happening, and to see that they believe in whatever he is doing for the good of all and for the good of the country.
The president has been away now for nearly a month. Was there any time that you, as a Nigerian and other Nigerians, ever felt that your government was not being run properly, or there was a vacuum because of the president's absence?
Really, there are some minor issues. But one important thing, this is about the first time a president can give wholeheartedly the powers and whatever it takes to his vice president, because he trusts him, he believes in the rule of law. So even before the president left the country, he wrote to the National Assembly of the country and transmit his approval to them that the vice president will going to hold on and take full responsibility of whatever it involves in governance. So I don't think there are any vacuum that was created. Nonetheless, you cannot run away from one or two issues here and there. But I want to assure you that Nigerians were unisom in the fight against corruption. And they believe in the vice president, that even when the president was there, the vice president was a very strong ally in supporting the administration policies and programs toward entrenching good governance and democracy in Nigeria.
Sadiq Omar Abubakar Gombe is a political analyst. He was speaking with me from the city of Gombe in northeastern Nigeria. The war against Boko Haram is leaving women vulnerable to poverty, violence, and isolation, U.S. Deputy UN Ambassador Michelle Cezanne told VOA during a Security Council mission to the Lake Chad region of West Africa. The council went to see areas in Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria affected by the militant group. Ambassador Cezanne sat down with VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir on the trip's final stop in Abuja, Nigeria.
About 26 million people in the four nations are suffering from the effects of a humanitarian crisis fueled by the terror group's attacks, including severe food shortages. Ambassador Sisson said women who were formerly involved with Boko Haram, either voluntarily or involuntarily, seem to be stigmatized more than men who fought with the group, especially when it comes to their ability to marry and return to their home communities. They face other problems as well. They are often widowed or alone, caring for several children with no way to provide an income for their family.
When we asked, I asked yesterday in the women's tent, how many of you are the head of the household? And almost every hand went up of some two dozen women. So these women had either lost their husbands because they were killed or they'd been recruited into Boko Haram. They were no longer with the family. And these women had often lost one or more children to recruitment to Boko Haram.
In Marwa in northern Cameroon and in Maiduguri in northeastern Nigeria's Borno state, Security Council representatives met with displaced and refugee women.
In Maiduguri, when we were talking about food rations, and one of the mothers said, well, I have eight children, and these food rations are not stretching far enough to feed all eight children, so I've had to go outside of this camp to beg. Now, that's a wake-up call for the international community to look at the sustainability of the way that we're funding this rather severe food insufficiency crisis.
Senior government officials in all four countries told council members that they have made significant progress in degrading Boko Haram's military abilities, but that the group still poses a threat because its fighters have switched to more asymmetric tactics, such as suicide bombings and improvised explosive devices. The United States has committed more than $300 million to humanitarian assistance to the Lake Chad region for 2016 to 2017, and another $40 million to enhance security cooperation among the four countries. Ambassador Sisson said of the visit that the council saw a more stark, difficult, and challenging picture than they had expected.
I think there are some very unique challenges in this Lake Chad Basin area that are going to continue to put this on the front burner for all of us.
Sisson said she and her Security Council colleagues would continue to push for a scaled-up and sustained response to the Lake Chad Basin situation. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, Abuja.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, March 10th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Gambian authorities have exhumed the body of opposition activist Solo Sandeng, who died in custody last year during former President Yahya Jammeh's regime. Sandeng led a peaceful opposition march for political reform on April 14, 2016, but died in detention shortly after his arrest by state security agents. His arrest sparked protest in Banjul and led to the arrest of opposition leader Usainu Dabo, who is now foreign minister in the new government. Sidney Marina reports from Banjul.
Nine officers of the then FIA National Intelligence Agency linked to Sandeng's death have been arrested and charged with his murder. The agency top officials stand accused of jailing, torturing, and killing ousted dictator Yahya Jammeh's opponent. Mr. Sandeng remained where on act in front of his son, Mohamed Sandeng, after the former operation director of NIA, Sheikh Omar Jan, investigators to a secret burial site of the former regime.
All I wanted was to see a respectful burial for my father, because he was a Muslim and he deserves a proper burial other than that was given to him. So that was actually all I was up for, and there is hope that this is coming to be realized.
Jammeh ignored calls by the international community to open an independent investigation into Sandan's death, instead choosing to tell the former UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and Amnesty International to go to hell. Sandan's remains have been taken to the main teaching hospital in Banjul for medical examiners to ascertain the real cause of the death. In another development, Gambia Press Union says the attack on journalist Gebad Jifang after a press conference by supporters of the three government ministers is regrettable and unfortunate. The press union says the attack by party supporters who form part of the government that promised a new dawn of freedom for the press in the Gambia is a violation of constitutional provision that guarantee the freedom and the independence of the media, and failure to adequately address it will tantamount to impunity. According to the assaulted journalist Gebad Jifang, police have launched investigations into the cause and promised to bring perpetrators to justice.
I was assigned by my office to go and cover, because I'm the political correspondent for my office, that's for a newspaper. Mm-hmm. So on this Sunday, they forwarded an email from the media unit of the UDP that they have a press conference. So the office assigned me. I went there. When the press conference started, and then the leaders, three leaders, that is Lawyer Dabo, my Fati, and Ahmad Ba, they all made their deliberations. After everything had been done, now it was set for questions and answer session. I was forced journalist to rise and then ask my question. So when I was asking my question, I had to force introduce myself, and then in doing this I said I am a reporter from foreign newspaper. So this is where everything started. As soon as I said I am a reporter from foreign newspaper, I could see a big murmuring coming behind, and then people were saying, it's Khalifa's agent, it's Khalifa's agent. You could hear this in the video. So this is one thing. That is why I want to use the opportunity to make it clear that it has nothing to do with my question.
Call for a swift investigation of the incident and those found wanting to be held accountable. Meanwhile, nomination of candidate for the April parliamentary election in the Gambia have commenced, with nomination of various aspiring candidates from different political spectrum. For VOA News, I am Sini Marena in Banjul.
The International Criminal Court, ICC, has invited South Africa to explain its decision not to arrest Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir during the African Union Summit in South Africa 2 years ago. Opposition and civil society groups accused the South African government then of failing to keep its commitment as a signatory to the Rome Statute, which established the ICC. ICC spokesman Fadi El Abdallah tells viewers Peter Clotty that the public hearing would enable the Pretoria government to explain its decision before the judges decide the ICC's next step forward.
The chamber invited representative of South Africa, but also the prosecutor and others, to make written submissions in advance and also to participate to the hearing. They wish to make oral submissions. And during the hearing, the submissions will be presented to the chamber with respect to whether South Africa failed to comply with its obligations under the ICC Rome Statute by not arresting and surrendering Mr. al-Bashir while he was on its territory, and whether the circumstances are such that a finding of non-compliance by South Africa in this respect and referral of the matter to the Assembly of State Parties, to the Rome Statute, and or to the Security Council of the United Nations are warranted.
So, Fadi, what's the next step forward after they have considered the pros and cons and made a decision or a determination if indeed South Africa flouted its commitment to the Rome Statute that established the ICC?
Basically, the judges, after studying the submissions, will have to decide whether South Africa failed to comply with its obligations or not, and whether or not the circumstances are that a finding of non-compliance by South Africa and a referral of the matter to the Assembly of State Parties or to the Security Council or to both are warranted.
Recently, the African Union has called for reforms at the ICC, and that if there's no reforms, then there shouldn't be a cooperation. Some critics of the court are saying that South Africa should not even go to what they call the summons because of the recent request by the African Union to see reforms before taking cases in that matter to the ICC. What's your response to that?
South Africa has been invited by the ICC trial chamber to present observations regarding its own cooperation or non-cooperation in the arrest and surrender of Mr. Omar al-Bashir to the ICC when he was on its territory. South Africa is a state party to the ICC, and as such, there is a certain number of legal obligations that are resulting from being a party to the ICC Rome Statute. And South Africa is an important state party and has played a key role in the creation of the ICC. Whether or not there are needs to reform the ICC, that's a matter that can be discussed between the states that are parties to the ICC Rome Statute. It's the states who have the power to amend the Rome Statute. The ICC apply the statute and the legal rules that have been already adopted by the states.
Critics in South Africa say the invitation or so-called summons is an embarrassment for the country and the need for South Africa to pull out or withdraw.
The invitation is intended in allowing South Africa to present its observations on all the issues related to its own obligations and its compliance or non-compliance with its own obligations. So it's an opportunity for South Africa to present its arguments to the ICC Rome Statute.
Fadi El Abdallah is the spokesman for the International Criminal Court. He spoke with VOA's Peter Klotte from The Hague in the Netherlands. The United Nations says nearly 2 years since the elections crisis in Burundi, the country is still at risk of intensifying the crisis. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir has more.
Speaking to the UN Security Council, the Secretary General's Special Advisor, Jamal Ben-Omar, reported a fragile security environment, soaring unemployment, especially among the youth, and deterioration of the humanitarian situation in Burundi. He also underscored that the political impasse has only deepened in the 2 years since President Pierre Nkurunziza sought what many viewed as an unconstitutional third term in office. Perhaps most troubling is the worsening human rights situation.
Many Burundians live in fear as a result of widespread repression and increasing intimidation by the Imbonerakure, the ruling party's youth militia. Members of opposition political parties, as well as perceived opponents, reportedly continue to be victims of arbitrary arrest, detention, ill-treatment, and enforced disappearance.
Ben-Omar said 3 million Burundians need humanitarian assistance, a quarter of the population. Since the crisis erupted in 2015, nearly 400,000 people have fled the country, and the UN Refugee Agency projects that number will reach a 500,000 by the end of the year. In July 2016, the UN Security Council authorized a 228-member international police force to deploy to Burundi to prevent human rights violations and provide stability for an intra-Burundian dialogue. The government has continued to reject the council's decision, and the force has been unable to deploy. Former Tanzanian President Benjamin Mkapa, who is the facilitator for the opposing sides, told the council via a video link from Entebbe the parties are far apart, despite intensive efforts to bring them together.
Each side claims to be the depository or the custodians of the Arusha Agreement and the Constitution. And the tendency is to see the other side as the criminals, And therefore, they are the ones that should be visited with all the wrath of the power of the state or the power of the international community.
Ben-Omar expressed his frustration with the Burundian government, saying the United Nations has tried to engage with Bujumbura, but the doors to engagement and cooperation have been largely shut by the authorities. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Daybreak Africa time is 24 minutes past the hour. It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the semi-final results of the Total Under 20 African Cup of Nations being hosted by Zambia, where on Thursday, Senegal booked their place in the finals for the second successive tournament after they defeated Guinea 1-0 in the second semi-final played at the Levy Wanamwasa Stadium in Indola on Thursday. The young Teranga Lions will come up against host Zambia, who saw off the challenge of South Africa in the first semi-final played at the National Heroes Stadium in Lusaka. Lusaka on Wednesday. Coach Bestin Chambishi of Zambia praised his players following their victory over South Africa. South African coach Thabo Senong says he's proud of his players following their narrow defeat to Zambia in the 2017 Under 20 African Cup of Nations semi-finals on Wednesday night. The final will be played at the National Heroes Stadium on Sunday, March the 12th. Nigeria have maintained their 7th position in Africa and fought a first in the world according to the latest FIFA ranking released on Thursday. African champions Cameroon, who Nigeria faced in the FIFA World Cup qualifier in August, are 3rd in Africa and 32 in the world. Algeria and Zambia are in 50th and 90th position respectively in the world ranking. Argentina lead the world ranking with 1,644 points, with Brazil, Germany, Chile and Belgium following the Alba Celeste in that order. And on to CAF Champions League news, where the 4 most successful clubs in African competitions entered the 2017 CAF Champions League this weekend, expecting to build first leg leads at home in their last 32 ties. Record 19-time title winners Al Ahly of Egypt face South African league leaders Wits, who are playing in the elite African competition for the first time. TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo, second behind Al Ahly with 10 successes, meet unimpressive preliminary round winners Caps United of Zimbabwe. Elsewhere, Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia, the only club to win all 5 current and past CAF competitions, also boasts 9 titles ahead of a clash with AS Tanda of the Ivory Coast. Reigning African champions Mamelodi Sundowns will open the defense of their crown with a home match against Uganda's KCCA in Pretoria on Friday, while the other match on the day is a potentially explosive clash between Zamalek of Egypt, winners of the 9 continental competitions and 2016 Champions League runners-up, and Enugu Rangers of Nigeria. Esperance of Tunisia, V Club of DR Congo and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco complete the lineup of clubs who lifted the richest and most prized African trophy. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington, and do have a nice weekend.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to return home today, Friday, after nearly a month abroad on an extended medical leave. The 74-year-old president went to London January 19 this year for what was called routine medical checkups. He has since postponed his return twice. Gambian authorities have exhumed the body of opposition activist Solo Sandeng, who died in custody last year during former President Yahya Jammeh's regime. Sandeng led a peaceful opposition march for political reform on April 14, 2016, but died in detention shortly after his arrest by state security agents. And the International Criminal Court, the ICC, has invited South Africa to explain its decision not to arrest Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir during the African Union summit in South Africa 2 years ago. Opposition and civil society groups accused the South African government then of failing to keep its commitment as a signatory to the Rome Statute, which established the ICC. And that's it for this Friday, March 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Jackson Vunganyi, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing every one of you a very good weekend.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa.